Loads more that have come through. Having a scan down there. Yeah, another one saying,
I like the one from Susan. Sorry, text again.
Yes.
The issue, yeah, that one.
But the issue here, and with the financial improprieties making news in general, is that policies and standards are based on
economic models
of human behaviour. Yeah, people are not rational. We have decades of research to confirm this in a variety of areas. Expecting everyone to just be honest or follow the rules isn't the best way to get things done. Unfortunately, it's not. Yes, and that's why we have laws and rules, well, and regulations to abide by. But
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think to the point of a lot of listeners is that bankers, it sounds like, they actually not regulate
above
in
the
that
rules.
Sense.
Well, they are. Well, they are.
They're not regulated,
but they
in the sense
won't.
Of
well,
you know,
the banking institution is regulated, but the banker isn't. No.
And also the overall objective, no. You know, in terms of some kind of code of ethics to follow. It sounds like that doesn't really apply to bankers.
The code of ethics was something that you'd expect the BBA to be in charge of. So let's go back to Britain and just say, because we know that one very well, in England, you've got the BBA, the British Bankers Association. They were the people who were told in 2008 of the LIBOR with an E in the middle. They were told of this scandal developing. And what did they do? They hid it. They didn't say anything. They didn't come out in the open and say, now you watch their speaker. I'm not going to mention names. But you watch their speaker over the last 3 years, and goodness me, talk about vested interest. I mean, you know, and to me, the trouble is with these institutions, they don't realise that if they go beyond the norm and go into a world of make-believe where they do what they want, they actually kill themselves. Because if you look at banks, if you look at, say, Barclays or NatWest or RBS or Lloyds or any of the British banks or any of the Irish banks, any of the Spanish banks, any of the French banks, any of them, their shareholders are now worth probably 10% of what they were worth 10 years ago. So who's won? Who has won out of this madness?
Where's it all gone? Was it just not there in the first place?
A lot of it wasn't there in the first place, no. But an awful lot of it has gone to the senior management, who've been taking incredible bonuses for fooling everyone. And that's what's coming out now, isn't it? We're beginning to see the uncovering of the fact that the top 100 or 1,000 or whatever number it is in each institution has negotiated salaries and bonuses and contracts and options that are beyond just unbelievable amounts, considering that their shareholders have lost 90% of their money. So who won? Well, the clients didn't. They got a worse service. The customers didn't, because, again, they either got a worse service or they borrowed too much because they were lent too much. The shareholders lost. So who won? The economy lost. Now, what we are seeing is a massive move or a massive public uprising to say the banks should be part of the economy, should be part of the system that helps us all, i.e. like a water company, like an electric company, not something that stands out on its own and abuses everyone and then walks away with the money. That's not right. It can't be right.
A number of more text messages come through. Islamic banking came in the 80s to answer the moral need of clients because they felt that banks were taking advantage of them. I don't know, and I know you're not sort of so familiar with Islamic banking as well. I don't know enough
about
it.
I can speak to it, to be honest with you. I mean,
not sure if that was the reason.
It's a bit of an idealistic comment, because we deal with a lot of Islamic mortgages right now, and unfortunately they're not drafted and not constructed with that sentiment in mind. And, you know, they basically conduct themselves in very much the same ways as sort of traditional banks as well, if not even, you know, maybe more objectionable, at least by some people's account. So unfortunately, I mean, it's a nice ideological sort of principle or thought, but in reality that hasn't really proven to be the case.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure if that was why it came out. I don't know enough about it to really comment, I don't think, but it goes on to say that today in Europe, bank clients are asking for morally approved transactions to meet their needs. Clients do not know much and trust you like a child trusts his mother. The banking industry needs a moral and ethics therapy. Another text message, everyone that has a lot of money has the fortune of a good education and rely on those more fortunate in financial matters to advise them. Yes, of course. I mean, that's what they're advisors. They're supposed to do such independently. Unfortunately, we are finding out those said people are missing, informing and are not so well educated as we think.
Have you seen this one here? Bankers spend half their lives in compliance courses. And also, banks don't sell houses. Estate agents do. Well, I'll tell you what they do in effect, because if you know what? If you don't lend the money to people, you can't you can't buy a house, whether there's 100 estate agents involved or one. So the bank is the animal, it's the gatekeeper. the bank is the gatekeeper that allows the economy to grow stupidly or grow sensibly or not grow at all, because it feeds the money through. Now, it is given that privileged position by the government and by the system to act as the gatekeeper. When it loses, when it gets drunk and doesn't service the market anymore and doesn't act as the gatekeeper, that's when you get a crisis.
Another great one.
So many messages coming through.
I'm a teacher with 2 degrees and only a little knowledge of financial affairs. I seek advice from so-called experts, but they are in it for themselves and not independent. I do a lot of reading, but you should be able to trust advice. Banks are now like having a dog in charge of a butcher shop. They have no ethics and have too much power that government are scared of, and the governments are scared of them.
A couple more. Bankers spend half their lives. Did you read that in compliance courses?
Yeah, that's the same one I read out. Actually, it's the same person. Right. Siobhan, let's be positive. All right, let's be positive.
This is another one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a devout listener to your show. The show is getting very negative and doesn't offer any positives.
Let's be positive.
Focuses on what has gone wrong.
Yeah, the positive is when you recognise what's gone wrong, only then can you do something about it. But if you continue to ignore why it's gone wrong, you cannot solve it. To me, it's like a medical condition. If you don't diagnose the right condition, you cannot solve it. So all I see at the moment is politicians completely misdiagnosing. Look at the Spanish came out that EU summit and said, everything's fine, we've got a banking union. No, they didn't. They were misleading the public again. So trust, if we don't have trust and if we don't have institutions we can trust, whether it's banks or whether it's governments or whether it's regulators, whatever they are, if we don't trust them, if they're not going to do the right thing for the public, then you cannot then recover. You cannot then become optimistic because you haven't got rid of the problem that you're still fighting. That's the issue. Recognize the problem.
You know what I was saying earlier as we got to our little head-to-head there, Mike? I don't think you can completely blame bankers. I think there has to be some responsibility. And this, you know, it says it's so boring listening to how bankers are at fault for everything. It's people's materialistic greed encouraged by voted politicians, which I think is an interesting point.
I agree. Excuse me.
Right.
So also banks are responsible, but I blame the regulators even more for not stepping in and intervening. Look at the BOEs and Feds and ECBs, etc. Shameful.
No, I agree, and that comes back to politicians allowing them. I explained that earlier about the UK and how Gordon Brown split the role of the regulators, which then meant no one really knew who was doing what, and things fell down the cracks. So yes, politicians do it in order to get votes, and therefore they do it in a very simple way, like who's going to have more money, they'll vote for me. So therefore, who's going to feel more comfortable owning a house? But where are we now? All these people who did feel more comfortable owning a house, whether it's in the States from the Clinton administration, who were able to borrow through subprime, etc., or in the UK, or in Spain, or in Ireland, are these people grateful now? No, of course they're not. They're destitute, some of them.
There's another one. So banks should regulate the house prices?
Yeah, see, that's the same person again coming back. He's obviously a banker and he doesn't understand the issue. So if he doesn't understand the issue, he's never going to get out the problem, is he? And that's the point.
Not necessarily.
If you don't understand the issue, banks regulate the house market by giving or not giving easy credit. It's that simple. If the banking system does not provide the credit, no estate agent can sell a house. No one can buy a house. In the 80s, we did not take house prices to this stupid level relative to salaries, relative to incomes. Why? Because the banks didn't give the credit. It's that simple. Banks are the gatekeeper.
There's another comment to that end. Definition of banking is buying.
Buying risk and selling trust, it says. And again, you see, we've lost all sense of risk, haven't we? I mean, that's what my business does, is tell people the risk. Why? Because people have lost sight of where the risk is, because they've got this massive marketing machine coming at them, telling them all the rewards. These are the wonderful things you can have, but no one's actually sitting down saying to them, unless you go to page 47 and the last 42 pages of an agreement, which is all in very small writing, which says, oh, by the way, these are the risk areas. No one wants to read that, and I know it's their fault partly, but again, when you've got a massive marketing machine with billions of spend each year, versus, and here's your teacher with 2 degrees saying she can't cope or he can't cope with it. Why? They're an intelligent person, but they're bombarded and they work all day. They expect to go. When you go to a doctor, you expect a fair diagnosis. when you go to a banker, you should get a fair diagnosis, not a salesman telling you you can have everything you want as long as you sign this form and you pay this amount of interest.
We must go to another quick break, but just going back to one of the other text message from Daniel, thank you for that. He says, suggest that we get a banker or, sorry, it's just closed now, a banker or an investor, etc., on the programme. So that could be our mission for next week, if you like, Mike.
Yeah.
Who are we going to get on?
Yeah, but do you remember when we had that debate? We had that debate on Richard Dean's show the other night, and we had a banker, and he agreed with me.
Oh. Well, let's get him back on. Who was that?
Oh, I'm not going to say names because it wouldn't be right. But he argued with me at first about the EU and about the crisis there because he comes from Ireland. But in the end, he had to actually agree with me with the actual diagnosis of the problem. So that you know, again, if you go, let's get the diagnosis right. I'm not a pessimist. I keep saying that on this show. I'm an optimist. But you can't move forward until you diagnose the problem you've got.
Right. Another message. Banks are at fault for lending before and now in trouble for not lending? Who should decide
true.
Where to lend to? You are confusing the lending
functions of banking, investment banking.
Yeah. I like this one. I am an ex-banker, as he was. Yes, I am an ex-banker, and I wouldn't be in banking now for all the money in China, because do you know what? I don't like it. It's not banking.
Anyone looking for a mortgage should ask themselves several questions. What if I lose my job? What if I'm not able to work anymore for whatever reason? As soon as you sign that paper, you are giving the bank permission to charge you whatever they like, because they are allowed to change your interest rate at will. And they're going to say, oh yeah, of course, they need to give you 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, well, again, you know, that comes down to the detail, and that will depend on the agreement. But let's go. We're talking more macro at this stage. We're talking the whole system has got out of control, and it needs reining in.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, actually, going back to one of the text messages saying you are confusing the lending functions of banking and investment banking, which are very different.
They are. But the investment bankers, what did they do? They created securitisation to take mortgages off the bank's books and spill it out to investors who wanted yield. But by doing that, allowing the banks to create another load of mortgages, which the bank then needed a sales force, which the sales force then sold to people who didn't know what they were doing, and sold them another load of mortgages because they needed them to feed the investment bank. It's a wicked circle. And at the end of the day, if you allow banks to become so total in the system like they have been since 87, when we allowed all the banks to merge and the investment banks to merge with the clearing banks, to merge with the building societies, you've taken away several normal stops in the system that didn't allow it to go out of control.
Another great comment. Banking is a job of encouraging entrepreneurs but keeping an eye on the old lady's deposit that he was trusted him without forgetting the interest of the shareholders.
Yeah, and who has won? Has the old lady won? Has the borrower won? Has the shareholder won? No, only the banker. So there's your... Follow the money. All the president's men, 1962, follow the money.
We're going to take a quick break. More to come on the programme.